Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of The Synopsis. I am Zach and I will be your host as we go down the rabbit hole on today's episode of mysterious disappearances that have still yet to be solved. So before we even start anything on the podcast, I believe I owe you guys an explanation where I was on Friday. So let me indulge you for a good few minutes about my life and what exactly happened to make me miss Friday's episode, which I am very truly sorry about. So, Thursday night, I usually record my podcast. I record it the night before, I edit it, I render it, and I go ahead and I upload it onto Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you can get your podcast from, and it goes live on Friday. However, I may or may not have forgot to render the podcast and edit it correctly, so it was just a mess. Also, it was thrown upon me that my wife had decided to go with my child to her parents' lake house for the weekend. I know, must be nice. So that means I was left in charge of taking care of all the animals. And I know you're thinking, well, Zach, you've got two dogs and two cats, how difficult is it to take care of them? It's difficult when you are working from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. 2 days in a row on a Friday and a Saturday. So that is basically why I missed the podcast and recording, because Thursday night it wasn't uploaded, and then Friday, with the animals having to be taken care of, I had to get up at 4:30, 5 a.m., let them out, let them do their business, give them something to eat, and then make sure they were comfortable to be left alone effectively for the next 12 to 14 hours, which is awful. They do have a lot of room in the house to run around and to roam and to play, and they play with the cats, so it wasn't like they're being mistreated or anything like that, so don't get any ideas like that. I love my dogs, my cats, I take care of them very well. I treat them like they are human and they are my children, which is ironic because I also have a child. So I came back from work on Friday night and I was like, you know what? I was thinking while I was working, I should probably record a podcast at night on Friday, and then maybe I can just upload it late, be like, sorry guys, I missed the upload time. You know, it is what it is. Then something happened. For those who don't know, I am a chef. That is my job. That's what I do. I'm not saying like, oh, I'm a chef. No, that is my legitimate title. I am a chef. I went to school for this stuff. So, suck it. I was cooking an item, and when said item needed to be flipped on the platter that it was cooking on, the boiling butter that it was marinating in, so to speak, decided it would be a great time to jump up and splash my hand. Now, normally, little burns and that, I don't mind, you know, it is what it is, it doesn't really hurt. However, boiling butter, especially an ounce of boiling butter, hurts, as they say, like a motherfucker. And yes, I know I don't really swear on the podcast, but it did. And I was in a lot of pain, and I went home, had my hand in ice all night. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not doing the podcast tonight because I'm in pain. I just want to go to bed. I'm tired. I'm over this day. So I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning and my hand was completely blistered from the knuckles and fingers down. The butter at that time obviously got me pretty damn good. And unfortunately, it burnt the shit out of me. It made me blister up and my hand is still blistering. The front part of my hand is still blistering. Nice couple of bubbles on my hand. I'm actually going to post it on the Instagram stories. So if you are listening to this podcast right now, 24 hours to see what my hand looked like and what it looks like at this point in time. Pretty gnarly stuff. It's still leaking. It's still like pussing out the open blisters that have popped already. You can see where it is very sensitive skin. I obviously need to wrap it when I go back to work to make sure none of that contaminates anything. But yeah, it was really, really sucky. And obviously I went back to work on Saturday. And on Saturday, again, I was working from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m, 9 p.m, whenever we decided enough was enough and we're closed for the night. And it just got to a point where I'm like, okay, I don't have enough time to get this podcast out. Because as soon as I got home, I have to let the dogs out, I have to play with them, I have to feed them, I have to make sure that they're content. Last night, my female dog, Jessie, I don't know what her problem was, but she was barking at every single thing. I think she was thinking that my wife and my kid came home because she like heard a noise or something. So she would bark at literally everything all damn night, and then she would have to go outside to pee, and then her brother was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go pee too. And then they were outside for like 20 minutes sniffing the ground because it's dark and we have moles and we have gophers and we have birds and squirrels and rabbits. And they like to smell the nature and everything around it. So they're out there sniffing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't exactly yell at them to get back inside. So I have to wait patiently for that. So I got like 2 hours sleep last night. Went into work at 5 a.m. today. And now I am finally recording a podcast, because the one that I tried to render just corrupted and was deleted. It is a Sunday, and I finally finished work at like 12 o'clock in the afternoon, like, you know, midday, and I'm recording a podcast now. Now, the main thing as well with these podcasts is I'm trying my best to upload twice a week. There is a catch, though. With the wife and the kids, it's difficult, and I'm going to explain to you why it's a little bit difficult. So, where I have my podcast set up is, it's kind of our laundry room. So I have the washer and dryer to the right-hand side of me, and to the left I have a door where you can walk through it, and it goes into our open floor plan, with the kitchen and the living room and all that stuff. So right next to me, before the door, is the little broom closet, which has the air conditioning unit in it. And if the AC unit's on, you can hear it in the background constantly, and you'll hear a constant buzzing, and it can't be drowned out by background music or anything like that. It's just a buzzing. So I have to turn off the AC. I have to make sure the washer and dryer don't need to be used. I have to make sure that I'm in a quiet enough area for you guys to hear me, but also that you can't hear background noises like the kid watching her shows or my wife watching her shows, whatever it may be. So it's very hard and very difficult to get podcasts recorded under these circumstances. And my wife's fine with me recording the podcast whenever, but it's just so many things together. Like, it will get hot when the AC's off. Right now in Missouri, it's like very, very annoying. Because one day it will be raining, but it will still be like 95 degrees. And the next day it will be beaming sunny all day, and it's like 120. It's ridiculous. Or maybe not 120, but like 13, something like that, a high amount. So you turn off the air conditioning unit, and the house is going to get hot. And with these podcasts, you know, it's like an hour and a half that I do a recording typically, and I have to edit everything. Like, editing, I don't have to have the air off. But when I'm doing my recording, and if I mess up so badly, I have to delete and re-talk or do something like that, it really takes time, and it gets hotter in the rooms. And obviously, I'm in this little room, and this is the best place for me to set up my podcast. When I first started the podcast, I tried doing it in the garage. Let me tell you something. It was like 150 degree sauna in there. I was sweltering. I was sweating. I was basically doing a podcast wearing nothing but my briefs because it was so damn hot. But I decided to move it inside. And, you know, like right now, I can record a podcast. There's no one around. It's quiet. Everyone's gone. It's just you and me, and you're listening to my sensual voice, I believe that's how you say. So it's easier for me to do a recording. When there's noise and when there's things going on, it's not that easy, and it's more difficult. So also, thinking about that, you know, it takes time for me to try and figure stuff out. So if I do miss an episode here and there, I do apologize. I really, really do. But it's just difficult right now. If I had my own little area, my own little booth or something like that, where I could just be closed off, I don't have that luxury. We have an open floor plan house. And with my setup, you know, the microphone and all that stuff, it's easier just to have it on this desk table. It's easy to have the computer plugged in. It's just a lot easier than trying to, you know, have it in the bedroom. I tried doing the recordings in the bedroom once, had the door closed, had it nice and quiet, but I had to stand the whole time. And I was bending down constantly to try and talk into the microphone because you couldn't hear me as well. And it was just a bad time. So that is why I will miss some episodes. Some days I'll get 2 out there a week. Some days it may just be 1. I do apologize. But I'm trying to be consistent, trying to be more consistent. I know you guys get mad at me when I'm not as consistent, especially those who are donating to the channel, to the podcast. I do appreciate you guys donating here. And you can donate to us on patreon.com/thesynopsispod. We have multiple different tiers, $1, $5, $10, and $20. So if you don't like what we're talking about in an episode, if you're a Patreon of ours and you donate $20 a month or more, you will choose the topics of the podcast for each week. So one podcast a week will be a topic of your choice. Great idea that I think I put out there. If you want to donate, awesome. Even a dollar's just being a backer, you're supporting us. I appreciate it. A couple of supporters, you know, it helps me know that you guys enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm not just talking into a microphone and hoping for the best. You know, I can see the analytics, I can see who's listening and where you're listening, not exactly the person, but I can see what you guys are liking and what you're not liking. And last episode wasn't as popular as the previous episode, so Area 51 was topical at the time. I'm sure I got a lot of clicks off Twitter and Instagram because it was trending because of the Raid Area 51 stuff. And then we did our last episode, which was about possession. That didn't go down as well. So I will try and keep up with the trends and all that good stuff. But I like talking about things that I find interesting. And it's one of those things where it's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. I understand that. And yes, I said cup of tea, being English. Americans, you can laugh now. My English listeners, thank you for understanding. So, like I said, $20 or more, you can choose the topic. So if you don't like what I'm talking about and I'm just kind of freeboarding stuff off the top of my head, or you're like, oh, I don't like these topics, I don't like these mysteries, I don't like this darkness, I want something light, something happy, I want you to review anime or review music, patreon.com/thesynopsispod. The Synopsis Pod is also on our Twitter and our Instagram. That is what our ads are. So without further ado, actually, before we get into the This Time Online, because you know we got to hit that This Time Online, let's give a quick shout out to ethics.com. That is ethcs.com. Ethics.com is on Depop now. You can check those guys out. Link in the description, or go to ethics.com. You can donate old previous ethics clothing to the company and they will give you a discount on new stuff coming back to you. Great idea, great little company that's going on there. Completely animal free, cruelty free, vegan friendly, so definitely check them out. And also another person I want to shout out today is going to be brandless.com. Now if you haven't heard of brandless.com, you are missing out. brandless.com. Check them out. A lot of products for very, very cheap. As cheap as a dollar. Most expenses I've seen is like $15. They do now do CBD oils, CBD creams. They do food. They do adult stuff, you know, like toilet paper. And not like sexual stuff. Don't know. That's like some adamandeve.com. And you use code synopsis for 50% off. That would be great if we had that as a sponsor. That would be fantastic. But no one sponsored me on this today. Brandless.com, check them out. They do food, they do household items, baby stuff, CBD, anything you can think of. Brandless.com will at least have one style of things that you would find in the store. Not like clothing and stuff like that. That's why we have Ethics for our clothing sponsor. But definitely check out Brandless for the food. So, without further ado, like I said earlier, let's get into This Time Online, and then we are going to talk about missing people who have disappeared, and it still hasn't been solved. So, let's get into This Time Online. So This Time Online, we had a couple of things happen during the week I was off. Obviously, we had the Area 51 raid, which went down pretty well. The military were having fun with it. People were having fun. So it was one of those things where everyone was just enjoying their time there. So Area 51, nothing big happened. Some music was there. Some people showed up. Some guy Naruto'd run past the reporter. He is going down in history, obviously. And that was pretty much the Area 51 stuff. I was very surprised that it wasn't more public and there wasn't a lot going on. It was just kind of like, okay, we're here, that's about it. So that kind of threw me through a little loop because I was very, very sure that at least somebody would try and do something stupid. Somebody would do some dumb shit and get arrested, like those the Netherlands kids. Something like that, but nothing really did. So Area 51 was a bust. Unless the aliens, like, brainwashed us and we forgot, I don't know, that, you know, conspiracy, maybe a conspiracy, I don't know. Most of This Time Online is going to be YouTube stuff because that's mainly my demographic right now is YouTube and stuff like that. The KSI, Logan Paul boxing match is coming up, and apparently they won't do the press conference in England because of something with the promoters. KSI called out Logan Paul, saying that he was basically a bitch and wouldn't do it. Logan Paul responded saying, I will do it, but you have people on your team who are stopping it. And a bunch of other stuff happened in that whole entire thing. FoozyTube is now fighting Slim. I'm not sure how that happened, but apparently that's being streamed for free on Foozy's channel. I guess he's trying to make a comeback after his channel died off a while ago after that breakdown that he had, and he basically said he gave up everything and went batshit crazy. He really did. He went crazy for a hot minute. So, yeah. KSI Logan Paul coming up. I don't know who you guys have, and honestly, I don't really care about the YouTube boxing thing. I don't understand how it became a thing. Like, I get the whole aspect of it, like, oh, I don't like you, I don't like you, let's fight, but I don't know how it became a thing. So, yeah, Shane Dawson's documentary is coming out in a couple of days as of this recording. The Secret Life Underground of the Makeup Industry or something like that. Basically, it's a documentary he did with Jeffree Star. And apparently there's going to be a lot of drama there because there is mention of James Charles and that whole breakdown incident that he had, and all of that was recorded while Shane was doing this documentary. So apparently the beauty community may be going into World War 3 thanks to Shane. Now, I don't think that will personally happen. Shane Dawson does a very good job on his documentaries, making sure to show both sides of the story and not making it just a one-sided conversation. He did that very well with the whole It was the TannerCon. That was it. He had Tanner's side. He had her manager's side. He had her best friend's side. He had a lot of people there, you know, to explain their side of the story. And I feel like he'll do the same thing with the Jeffree Star documentary. That it won't be as dramatic as people are thinking. And everyone just needs to calm down a little bit and take life a little less seriously. Relax once in a while, please. You're not doing yourselves any favors by getting stressed out over one person's content and etc, etc. You're just going down that rabbit hole like we do here on The Synopsis. And it's one of those things like, why are you guys getting so stressed over little things? Like, don't get stressed over it. Just chill out. Relax. Life is good sometimes. Sometimes it sucks. It really does. But life is good right now. For me, anyway. I'm in a pretty decent mood. So that is a good thing, I think. I mean, you might not think so. That's cool. I mean, good for you, I guess. But I'm in a good mood. So this time online is pretty short. There's a lot I could talk about. Like the soccer results. Wolverhampton won their first game. Finally! Beating Watford 2-0, or 2-1, something like that. I don't remember. We won, that's all I care about. I could talk about that. I could talk about the NFL, how the Saints won, and they overcome. It's 2-1 now for them. I could talk about baseball. Cardinals play the Cubs today. But the thing is this, you guys don't want to hear that. You guys want to hear the main part of the podcast, basically. And that's cool. I'm okay with that. But you need to let me know. Like I said, do you want another host? Do you want me to bounce some ideas off of people? Do you want to join me on the podcast? Maybe that would be a Patreon exclusive. If you donate so much, you can join me on the podcast and we can do an episode together. That might be pretty cool to get to know you guys and you guys converse with me. I think that'd be a little dusty vibe. Let me know on Twitter or Instagram, like I said, at The Synopsis Pod. And we can go from there because I want to get more fan interaction from you guys. I enjoy getting the comments and the likes and stuff like that we have on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter and Instagram. But those likes aren't clicks, and those clicks don't turn into listens. And that effectively just goes down a hole of nothingness. So that's kind of sucky for me. But that is what life is. At times it can be difficult, and at times you go through hardships. And that's what The Synopsis is to try and help you guys. If you are going through hard times or you're going through something, reach out to somebody. Reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram. I keep plugging my social media. I need to stop that. Like, that's really bad, you know? Stop plugging social media. Insert media clip here for later. No, don't do that. That's just worse. I want to help you guys. I really want to be that podcast that you go to when you're not feeling that good, when you're feeling a little bit down on yourself, and you're not too happy about yourself or anything like that. Then you can come and listen to The Synopsis. You can listen to me converse with you guys, and you can listen to my voice, and you can just fade away, relax, sit back, and enjoy yourself, because that's what you should be doing. I don't care if you're having relationship problems, if you're having self-doubts, anything like that. If somebody's put you down, like self-image or anything like that, fuck them. Don't waste your life and waste your time thinking about what others think of you. Be yourself, enjoy life as you. That is the main goal. You're going to be happy with life once you're happy with yourself. The old cliche, you know, you have to love yourself before loving anyone else. It's a cliche, but it's very true. It's not necessarily love or anything like that, but once you're satisfied in your own skin, you're comfortable being yourself around everybody, then you have succeeded in life. The key of life has been released. There you go, off into the open, and you'll be happier forevermore. Much like me right now. I'm sure it won't last forever, but hey, right now your boy is enjoying it, and enjoying it he shall continue to do. One last thing before we get into our mysterious disappearances that have never been solved. I want to talk about magnet fishing. That's right. There's a new craze called magnet fishing that I have been doing the last few months. And there's a lot of YouTubers that I've noticed starting to do it. One of the most popular ones right now is going to be Mo Sarji. He has the most followers, even though he doesn't do it regularly. The most regular magnet fishing channel I believe I watch is called Outdoor Weekly. Check him out on YouTube. He has like 300,000 subscribers, something. I don't remember. I may be exaggerating that number. I thought he had like 3,000. But videos are great. You basically throw a magnet on a rope into the river and you pull it back like you're fishing and stuff comes out because we as humans are horrible people and we throw shit into lakes all the time. They find guns, they find tools, you know, bikes, signs, railroad pieces, you know, metal. Anything that has a magnetic pull, they probably have found already. But the reason I want to mention magnet fishing is not because it's cool and awesome and everyone should be checking out the channels. It's because Mo Sarji did a video called Magnet Fishing in the Dumpster. Now, I'm not the smartest man in the world, I will admit that. But I'm pretty sure if you're throwing a magnet into a dumpster, into a trash can, the big ones, you know, the industrial size ones, isn't that made of metal? And if that's the case, wouldn't you just be throwing a magnet to metal and that would be it? I mean, I don't know. That's just me. It's just my thought. But definitely check out Outdoor Weekly. There's a couple of other people that I watch, or my wife watches and I kind of watch with her. And he does some really good stuff. You know, he's a young kid. He's an up-and-comer on YouTube. He's going to go far if he continues doing his videos the way he does. Like I said, watching him magnet fish is really pretty cool. And if you guys want to magnet fish, by all means, check it out. Look at like a 200, 300-pound magnet, little jump rope kind of cable. Throw it into the river, pull back, and see what you can get. Let me know what you do get. That'd be kind of cool if you guys actually took my advice, then went out and did the magnet fishing or something like that, and then came back to me and was like, yo, Zach, check out what I got. That'd be a pretty dusty vibe. And maybe I'll do like a podcast live magnet fishing, and then we can just upload it like that and let you know what I get. I will tell you right now, I am going to the next STL Anarchy Wrestling event. That is in November, November 8th. I will see you guys there in Church in the Wild. I will be doing a review podcast of that show the next day. So if you are not a fan of my wrestling podcasts or my wrestling reviews or anything like that, then that's going to probably be one for you to skip. Just letting you know ahead of time, because obviously going to the event live, and then I'll watch it again on Independent Wrestling TV just to, you know, make sure that my live viewership wasn't a factor in my judgment. Because, you know, when you watch stuff live, like in person, it's pretty fun, you know, you have a good time. But I will do you a review of that event, Church in the Wild, so just letting you know in advance. So, with that being said, with some conversations being had, let's get into these mysteries and let's try and figure out why the hell we haven't solved them. Okay, so before we get in, it was actually 2-0 the Wolves-Watford game. It was 2-1 with their youth team. I just wanted to put that out there real quick because I don't want to sound like a moron. And yeah. So, let's talk about missing people, missing things, disappearances that just don't make sense. And obviously the first one we're probably going to talk about is the most, arguably the most popular disappearance of all time. It's the Malaysian Air flight. And that was Flight 370. And it was literally thousands of families affected by this thing. Every single year, there are hundreds of thousands of people that go missing. Either they run away, they get kidnapped, you know, they end up, they find a body, unfortunately. That may be the worst case scenario. But people go missing every single day in the world. and it affects families. Not quite like the Malaysian Airlines though. So Malaysian Airlines flight 370, now this was over 5 years ago now, how time flies. Actually, thinking about it right now, it could be more than that. I can't remember the exact date it disappeared, but it was 5 years ago, at least in March. Like this year, it was 5 years in March. Holy cow, that's a long time already. I remember it like it was yesterday. So, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 just disappeared from the sky. That was it. It just disappeared, and over 200 families were affected by this because there was over 200 passengers. This then affects other members of the family because you got 200 people on the plane. Let's say they have their parents alive still, okay, that's 400 people affected. The grandparents, that's 800 people affected. The brothers and sisters, that's probably over 1,000 people. So it affects a lot of people, and there has been no, what's the word I'm looking for? No closure for those families, and we're going to talk about why. The FBI abandoned the case, and everyone was baffled about that because they, you know, in 2000, it was 2014, so it was 5 years ago, it was 2014. The FBI decided to abandon it this year and just declare all these people as MIA, missing, you know, missing in action, or whatever the civilian term is for missing in action. And people were very confused why they did that. So let's get a little backstory on the Malaysian Airlines flight. It was a Boeing 777, and it was heading towards Beijing in China, and it was leaving from Malaysia, obviously. It had 12 crew members and 227 passengers, and after it was supposed to have a routine handover between air traffic control systems. So once you leave, like, Malaysia, your air traffic control is going to change because you're going into a different area, different territory, so a different group of people then tell you what your flight path is. Like, they work as a big unit. Like, that's why the air traffic controllers towers are so giant, because they're basically talking to everyone around the world, making sure all these planes and all these flights that are happening daily, and you think about how many flights there are a day, making sure everything goes pretty smoothly. So they were doing the passover, and this is where the flight just disappeared. They didn't know what happened. The aircraft crew were just gone. They were disappeared. And people were very confused. I was like, we can't communicate with them. There's not even a static response. It was just radio silence. And it was only a brief second of a handover. And then boom, it was disappeared. So the FBI, like we said, has deserted it. They said it was abandoned because there was a significant lack of evidence available for the FBI, and they are unable to determine with any certainty that the aircraft was either diverted or has crashed. So they cannot say for sure, you know, they cannot comfortably say that, hey, this is what happened. So these people are just in limbo, so to speak, right now. And it's kind of crazy when you think about that for a second, that over 229 people just disappeared. And I know it sounds like, oh, well, a plane disappeared. Of course, it's going to be something that, you know, affected the world and all that stuff. But really think about it. Within those 5 to 10 seconds of passing over the aircraft control, one communication system to another, boom, just gone. Now, there are a lot of theories with this Malaysian flight, that, like, the Bermuda Triangle was a theory where you go, you know, there's a big theory in the world that the Bermuda Triangle is basically a dead zone. And once you fly into it, that's it. You get transported somewhere, you're in another dimension or something like that. I'm not exactly sure the whole theory. I could look it up, but I'm too lazy to do that. But the Bermuda Triangle has many disappearances in there, and people are not sure where the people who go into the Bermuda Triangle go. And that was one of the theories, that, hey, maybe, you know, they flew over the Bermuda Triangle, or, like, there was a link like that, and that's what made the plane disappear. Others said it could have been aliens abducting, and, you know, aliens are popular right now, so who knows. Others have said that the plane, the pilots decided to take a detour, land at a different place. Maybe there was something wrong with the plane, they got stranded on an island, but when people retraced the flight path, they couldn't find the plane. So it's one of those things, we spoke about this a while ago, missing people, I believe it was, and there was someone who was found, it was the Amelia Earhart, and they were like, oh, she could be found on an island, we found some pieces of her plane. But this is a case where they can't even say that without certain that somebody has survived or is even, you know, unfortunately dead, because there has been no evidence, there's been no plane parts that have come out is just a disappearing act. It's like David Copperfield when he got rid of the Statue of Liberty and everyone was like, oh, what the hell just happened? But this was real. Like, Copperfield's magic was an illusion. This flight, this plane, just disappeared from the face of the Earth. And nobody knows what happened. And that is ridiculous to think about how that is not something that we're still looking into. I mean, it's been 5 years, yeah, but surely, you know, maybe we can go down into the ocean and see if there's anything that went lower under the seabed or something like that. Like we discussed in our other podcast, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. So maybe we should be looking in different places to try and find out and give some comfort to these families. Or maybe these people landed on an island. Maybe they're stranded, or maybe they started a little community. I don't know. It could be a Gilligan's Island kind of vibe. I'm not sure what happened. Nobody knows what's happened. It's a disappearance that is unsolved. So all these theories are out there. I need to take a drink of water real quick. You know, it gets hoarse talking to the microphone for a long time. But all these theories are out there. Nobody knows exactly what happened. And again, to me, that is crazy that this 220 people just disappeared. Like, we had incidences like Hillsborough in England. If you don't know what that is, maybe I'll do a podcast on Hillsborough. That would be fun for the Americans to listen to. You know, a lot of people died there, but we know what happened. It was a security issue, you know, there was a max capacity issue. People who have disappeared in that, you know, like we found the woman who was on top of the hotel in Las Vegas and fell into the water tank, and they're not sure how she got there, but they found the body. Malaysia flight has not been found. The Boeing has not been discovered. Nobody has been found, and nobody's body has come up. So this is a mystery that is just going to stay in the world for a long, long time. Till maybe one day somebody figures it out, or maybe one person goes, you know, scuba diving or skydiving or something involving diving, and they can just see a little glimpse of something, and that could crack a case wide open. So the Malaysian flight was one of our disappearances, but we have a lot of creepy ass mysteries that remain unsolved and disappearances. The disappearance of Terence William and Felipe Santos. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit briefly about these disappearances, like very, very briefly. And we'll move on to another one. And we'll keep going, like, you know, different mystery, different mystery, different mystery. Because then that way I'm not staying on something too long. And you guys won't get bored and you guys will learn more things. And it kind of is more interesting, right? You have multiple things in one podcast, learning different things and different stories and scenarios. It's more interesting than just Zach talking about one topic for 45 minutes. Let's be honest. So 2004 and 2003. Terence Williams was missing in 2004, Felipe Santos 2003. So this was in Naples, Florida. Both men were last seen being arrested by Steve Colkins. Now, Steve Colkins is a deputy in the Collier County Sheriff's Department, and they were both arrested for driving without a license. Colkins claims he changed his mind about both arrests and last saw the men after he dropped them off at a Circle K convenience store. 2018, we're jumping forward a little bit. Tyler Perry, you know, the actor from Tyler Perry's Everything, offered a $200,000 reward to any information leading to the location of both of these men. And even Al Sharpton and Ben Jealous of the NAACP joined Perry's awareness campaign to try and figure out what happened. So let's talk about Terence Williams. 2004, January 12th. Terence Williams was missing. He's missing. He's a father of four. He recently moved to Florida to be near his mother. He spoke to a friend, his roommate, Jason Gonzalez, the evening, January 12th, before heading to bed. Williams had attended a party that evening at a co-worker's house. He did not have a valid driver's license and was cited for driving under the influence. The registration on the car had expired. He decided to drive to the party illegally after being unable to find another ride. Gonzalez became concerned when Williams did not return home and emailed his mother on the 13th about his concerns. The Williams family then decided to call the police and they filed a missing persons report, and afterwards Williams' aunt was able to track down his car. He had been towed from a cemetery after obstructing traffic. It was towed away to the sheriff's department. The tow report was signed by Steve Colkins, who we have discussed a bit earlier. The family contacted the sheriff's department and discovered that Colkins had filed neither an incident report nor an arrest. This is where the story starts to get interesting, because this man had not reported anything. And they are thinking that Mr. Culkins here, Mr. Steve Culkins, is potentially a serial killer who works for the police department. I know that sounds like some Dexter stuff or some CSI stuff, but this is real life. They believe this man may potentially be a serial killer who works for the police department, is targeting black men, and he's trying to just kill them and get rid of them, apparently, from the looks of it. So his aunt contacted workers at the cemetery, who told her that they had witnessed Culkins pull Williams over and ask him for ID. He didn't have any. Employees said that Culkins was patted down Williams and put him in the back of his patrol car before driving off. Culkins then asked the cemetery employees to leave the Cadillac in the lot. He was witnessed returning to the cemetery between 15 minutes and an hour later and moving the Cadillac from a parking spot to the side of the road. The keys were found on the ground beside the car. Following this statement, the Williams family reportedly called the sheriff's office, department, to speak to Culkins. Upon being contacted by dispatch, Culkins claimed to have no memory of making any arrests or have any cars towed on the day Williams disappeared. He was later contacted and claimed to have somewhat better recollection of his contact with Williams. A few days later, Culkins' supervisor asked him to submit an incident report. Culkins' report states that he first came in contact with Williams after noting his car was driving in distress. Culkins claimed that he followed Williams into the cemetery parking lot and that he asked for a ride to a nearby Circle K convenience store because he was late for work. Williams did not work at Circle K. It is needs to be very clear that he did not work at a Circle K. This is something that has happened to two men now from the same person at a Circle K. So maybe there's a little rig going on. Maybe they're doing some underground deep web shit. Some red rooms maybe. Maybe he's selling people to kill. I don't know. Let's continue with our story though. He claimed to have returned the Cadillac and discovered the proper registration was not in the car and he felt deceived, so he called Circle K from his work issue cell phone and asked to speak to Williams. The clerk told him over the phone that Williams did not work there. Culkins then called in the license plate number and found the plates were expired, and on further investigation revealed that the phone and surveillance record did not back up Culkins' story. There was no sign of Williams or Culkins on surveillance footage from the Circle K, and the phone records from Culkins' cell phone show no call to a Circle K. The employees at Circle K were interviewed, and no witness can be found to place Culkins or Williams, there at the time. His aunt then decided to file a complaint against Officer Culkin. It led to a new case in a Mexican consulate in Miami after they contacted Williams' aunt to tell her about another man who had vanished in similar fashion. Mexican immigrant Felipe Santos had gone missing 3 months prior to Williams after Culkins claimed he dropped him off at another Circle K 4 miles from the location where he claimed he dropped off Williams. Right now, it's kind of seeing that it could be a rig. It could be somebody selling people off or, you know, not thinking they'll be missed or nobody's going to report it, and he's selling them to get them killed effectively. So Felipe Santos was a legal immigrant. He was a Mexican national, but he was living illegally in the United States. That's a hot topic right now. We're not going to go into that, but about illegal immigration and stuff like that. I'm not about to start any shit on the podcast over some dumb shit that some president has said over and over, and wars and all that, blah, 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 blah. We're not talking about it. But what we will talk about is the disappearance of Santos. He had been living in the US for 3 years at the time of his disappearance, approximately. He was sending money to his family in Mexico, which a lot of illegal immigrants do. They come in, they work the really shitty jobs for cheap labor. They send the money back to Mexico because it means a lot more to their family than it does to you reporting them or whatever it may be. He was driving to work with his two brothers when he was involved in a minor car accident in Naples. Steve Culkins cited him for reckless driving, driving without a license, driving uninsured, and put him in a patrol car, and that was the last they saw of Santos. Santos' boss contacted the county jail later to post bail, and it was discovered that Santos was never booked. Culkin claims that he changed his mind about the arrest because Santos was polite and cooperative, left him at a Circle K and drove off. The other driver in the accident contradicted the report, stating that Culkins was agitated about Santos' lack of document. He just stated that he was tired of putting people over that didn't have a license. That is what the eyewitness said. 2 weeks later, after Mr. Culkins submitted his incident report, Santos' family filed a missing persons report. And they also put another complaint into Culkin's. The investigation cleared Culkin's of any wrongdoing, as you would expect it would. Santos has not been seen or heard from since. His wife is questioning the quality of the investigation into his disappearance because she hasn't been interviewed by investigators. He is an illegal immigrant. They really don't think they care, which honestly, people probably don't. They probably don't give a shit because they're like, oh, well, the white American police officer is always right. The sheriff's department, stuff like that, you know what I mean? And so it's kind of funny that Culkin's involved in two disappearances, both at Circle K. But there was further investigation and suspicion on Culkin's when a recording of his call to dispatch requesting the tow of Mr. Williams' car at the time revealed further conflicting statements. Culkin's described the car as abandoned, blocking the road, and in his statement, he said that he moved the vehicle to the side of the road, but on his dispatch call, it says it's blocking the road. So people were now saying that Culkin's moved the vehicle to a location to block the road so it could get towed. Culkin said to the operator, maybe he's out there in the cemetery, he'll come back and his car will be gone. He was also heard using inappropriate language during the call, describing the car as a homey Cadillac. Culkin's defends his misstatements to the operator, telling investigators that he was just joking around with a friend who was the operator. Culkin's insists he moved the car to assist the towing company as opposed to attempting to make it look abandoned. But again, the fact that he used the car description as a homey Cadillac and then, you know, this car was just not looking abandoned, quote unquote, he does seem a big problem here. So 20 minutes later after this call, he requested a background check on Terrence Williams. He gave in an inaccurate birth date, a specific date that Williams had previously given the police when he was arrested. This contradicts Culkin's earlier statement that he never knew Williams' last name or any other personal details. So this man has been caught in four lies thus far. He became a person of interest, obviously. The FBI were called to work on the case. They used multiple interview techniques, investigation techniques, and other things. They put a GPS in his car. They did forensic investigation. They used cadaver dogs to survey the area identified by GPS. There no turned up investigations. And Culkin's was eventually fired from the department for providing conflicting information about both missing people cases and not cooperating with the investigation. Now, again, it's one of those things where he was rightfully fired, but if they were selling people or killing people, the cadaver dogs and the FBI wouldn't find that because he would have dropped them off at the Circle K, and that's where the handoff effectively would have been. And this went completely cold for a few years. The whole entire missing person thing went completely cold. No one was investigating. And then in 2012, Anderson Cooper's 360 and Dateline NBC did a couple of shows about the disappearance of Williams and Santos. And Tyler Perry went on to, like we said, Al Sharpton's talk show, offered $200,000 reward for any information. And there are a few theories that people talk about these disappearances. I have discussed a couple of my own where I believe, you know, maybe it was a trade, or maybe he sold them off to somebody, like, maybe there was a person waiting around the corner and that's how, like, he gets drugs. I don't know. But one theory, a very popular theory, is the Starlight Tour theory. And the Starlight Tour theory is a series of deaths that happened in Canada in the early 2000s, and they were caused by members of the police service who arrested Aboriginal men for drunken disorderly behavior, drove them out to the city in the dead of night, dead of winter and night, and abandoned them there. This practice was known as taking Indigenous people for Starlight Tours. So that is a theory that is pretty much out there. A number of podcasts, including ourselves, have explored the theory that Santos and Williams were dropped off in a nearby Everglades and died of exposure or other perils. Now, I don't believe that personally because the cadaver dogs would have found something on this disappearance. They would have found something in the Evergraves or any shit like that. And they didn't find anything. It's kind of crazy that people just disappear like that, and they looked at the officer, but they didn't look any further. They should have kept pushing him, kept tracking his stats, see where he's going daily. Like, if he's running some kind of illegal business like this, then he needs to be stopped, he needs to be caught, and he needs to be correctly charged and punished. You can't just have people disappearing and then be like, oh, it's whatever, they disappeared, it is what it is. Like, no, we're humans, we all deserve to be around. We all deserve to know where everyone is in our family. We need to know that. So, what the fuck? Guys, push on Culkin's more. It's 2019 now, surely we have more evidence. Push Culkin, see what can come up. So, Culkin looks suspicious. He looks like he's very guilty. Just throwing it out there. And what else I'm going to throw out there is the disappearance of 19-year-old Brandon Swanson, who lived in Marshall, Minnesota with his parents, and he disappeared May 14th, 2008. And I'm going to talk about that right after this quick little break so I can render this section and then I can get a drink and we will be right back. Now, the reason I do these podcasts in segments and things like that is because I have audio issues. We know this. We've had past problems where it cuts out and stuff. And I just want to make sure that, like, the audio is good. And if I do it in segments, that way, if anything does go wrong, I haven't lost a whole hour of recording or whatever it may be. I've only lost, like, 10, 15, 20 minutes, which can always be covered by a different subject. It's very frustrating if you do lose that segment, because now you're like, okay, nothing flows smoothly and all that crap. So hopefully nothing goes wrong. And speaking of going wrong, Brandon Swanson disappeared May 14th, 2008. And it was his last day of college. He went to celebrate with his friends out. He was driving home along a gravel road and crashed his car into a ditch. Unable to move it himself and get back on the road, he called home at some time after midnight and asked his parents to pick him up near a small town of southwest of Marshall, where he was stuck. Both sides got increasingly frustrated, and eventually Brandon said he was going to start walking towards the city of Lind to a friend's house. He said he knew which direction to head in, as he could see what it looked like, as he could see the lights of the town. His father dropped Brandon's mother off back at home, then began driving again to find his son. And around 2 a.m., Brandon and his father were on the phone to each other, when Brandon desperately trying to direct his father to where he was, and Brandon's father equally desperately trying to locate his son. 47 minutes into the phone call, Brandon suddenly exclaimed, "Oh shit!" and the line went dead. And that was the last time anybody heard anything from Brandon. His dad tried calling back the number, he never picked up the phone. His parents continued to search, were unable to find him. And around a few hours later, at 6:30, they notified the police. There was over 500 volunteers who spent 120 days looking for Brandon, or any evidence pointing to where he could be, or what happened to him. They covered over 100 square miles in the process, and it included 30 dog handlers from 9 different states. So this wasn't a small search. This was a big boy search. A lot of people were involved. And what happened? Nothing. No evidence, no clues, nothingness. The only thing that has ever been found is Brandon's car, which was discovered around 20 miles away from where he told his parents he thought he crashed. So he may have been lost just by, you know, it being dark, it being late. He might have been tired. He might have been under the influence. I'm not saying anything. I'm not accusing anything like that. But if he was confused and he thought he knew where he was, then maybe, you know, he didn't know where he was and he walked somewhere completely different. And that's why he was never found. I don't know. Maybe he was taken away. Maybe he found a car and they kidnapped him. There's many theories that could go on about this. Authorities said that neither any evidence or foul play had been found. They said that he hasn't staged his own disappearance. They also said they don't believe there was any evidence that he was impaired in any way. But again, you know, he may have had some alcohol in his system. They said if he was drunk, you know, it's likely his parents would have picked up on the phone that he was drunk, but not necessarily. Like, if you've only had, like, let's say a beer or a shot or whatever it may be, that could be enough to affect his thought, but it doesn't mean he's drunk. It just means his abilities have been impaired, and obviously they were, because he said his car was 20 miles away from where it was, and that just doesn't happen. You know, I mean, if you somewhat know where you are, surely you have an idea, especially if you live in a small town. And, sorry, I had to take a swig of water there. I didn't want to pause the podcast, but if you were saying you're 20 miles out from where you actually were, let's hypothetically think this through. 20 minutes away is where your car was found. You walked in the direction you thought the town was, but you didn't walk in the right town. You walked in a different area because you're 20 minutes away from where you thought you were. 20 minutes is a long distance in miles there. Like, you could get lost very quickly and you could, you know, be completely somewhere else very, very quickly. 20 minutes is a long ass time, especially when it's in a car. A 20 minute car ride is like, depending on speed and stuff, you can get pretty far, you know. So the authorities said they received over 75 tips about this kid, and nothing has been found. The last search was in 2011, and age progress photos have been used, you know, people were like, oh, maybe we'll notice him, but that was the last search they did. This was 8 years ago. And there are multiple theories, countless theories, but the most prevalent theory is that he fell into a river or a creek. It's 15 feet at Stevens Point. He would have been running fast at the time he disappeared, and he drowned. The problem with this theory, though, is that there would have been some trace if he had fallen, and so far nothing was found. Another theory is that he hid in an abandoned structure to escape the cold, and then died of hypothermia, or he was attacked by an animal and taken away. Yet again, though, there is no evidence of those theories, and it's literally just theories. Like, they're saying, you know, there could be this, it could be that. If an animal faintly wounded him and dragged him away, there would be a lot of blood left, you know? If he was hiding and died of hypothermia, they would have found a body, especially covering 100 square miles. That's a lot of mileage to cover, and they would look every single place. They wouldn't just be like, okay, we looked here, not here, and keep moving. They would look in every single room of abandoned buildings. Every single rock would not be turned. Like, they would switch everything. Why would he swear? And was another thing. Like, there was many theories. He was hit by a car, picked up by a helpful driver who ended up taking him away, but these have flaws as well. If a person has time to register danger, swear on the phone, and then end the phone call, they would have had time to get out of the way of an oncoming vehicle, right? If he was picked up by somebody, surely he would just tell his dad, hey, someone's picking me up, and he's on the phone to his dad, hey, somebody just stopped to pick me up, this is where I'll be. You know, if he offered to give him a lift home, why would he swear it? Why would he say, oh shit, you know, oh, someone's stopping by the road, oh shit. I mean, you wouldn't say that in a exclaimed persona or exclaimed voice as Brandon did to his father. His father described it as a very, like, despairing, oh shit, not a, ah, shit. The subject of the phone call is what the biggest thing that the police have been investigating. That the huge question here is why he ended the phone call. If something dangerous was imminent, it's unlikely he would have hung up the phone. He would have more likely dropped it, and his parents would have heard something drop. But instead, somebody pushed end on the phone. As it has been asked so many times, why? Like, if he was struggling, or like, let's say he was tripping and falling down the river, a car hitting him, something like that, you would have heard that on the phone. But he said, oh shit, and then the call ended. Somebody pushed the end button. Like, if you drop your phone when you're on the call to somebody, it doesn't just end. It continues going. There's no way that dropping the phone would just end a call right away. Like, the only thing I can possibly think of is, like, maybe he dropped the phone and the battery fell out. Maybe it was an old, you know, this was 8 years ago, 2011. We still had flip phones. But his dad said that he wasn't answering the call. And it means the phone must have been in working condition. Because if the battery was out, it would have gone straight to voicemail. My thought is that maybe he said, oh shit, and the call got ended because somebody snuck up on him. Like, let's say someone's behind you and they tap you on the shoulder and you're like, oh shit. And then they hit the call end button or something like that. But again, you would hear a struggle. You would hear something that would back up my theory. And they didn't hear anything. Now, 8 years later, there's no evidence or trace to even indicate where he is or what happened to him. All the searches, all the equipment, the techniques, everything, hours of investigation. Nobody knows what happened to this 19-year-old man who disappeared without a trace. In Minnesota, it's a law now to begin immediate searches for missing adults under the age of 21. And it has been named Brandon's Law, and especially if people, older adults who disappear under suspicious circumstances. But it was 20 miles, the car. where he said it was. When they found this car, this is something else. They found this car and there was no lights. There's no lights in that area. They couldn't see it anywhere where he would see lights. Which brings out the theory about aliens and abduction. And I know we keep ending up in aliens, but let's play devil's advocate for a second, okay? He saw lights. It was a spaceship. Or it was something like that, that he walked towards and then that's how he disappeared. And that would make sense because there's no trace of disappearance and he said that he was, you know, going towards lights. What doesn't make sense is why he would say, oh shit, and then hang up the phone. The biggest thing in this whole entire thing is why did he say, oh shit, and then hang up the phone right away? It doesn't make sense. It's very, very confusing. Because you wouldn't just hang up. If you saw aliens, wouldn't you be like, oh shit, dad, I just seen an alien. Or, oh shit, what the fuck is this? You would still be on the phone. You wouldn't just say, oh shit, click. That's my phone hang up noise, for those who are wondering. But, you know what I'm saying? It just doesn't add up. So maybe Brandon just got abducted. And if that was the case, maybe when he was abducted, that the phone automatically turned off or ended the call because of the technology or whatever, but it still showed us in working order. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. What's your guess? What are your theories? You could go down a rabbit hole on this one, like really, really, really far. All kinds of theories. You could have aliens. You could have abduction. Deep web stuff. Internet stuff. You know, there's no evidence of him just falling. So how did he disappear with no evidence? Like in the last case that we talked about with Williams and Santos, Williams and Santos, there was a key indicator, not key indicator, what am I, prime suspect, that's the word I'm looking, key suspect, whatever it may be. There was a suspect in the disappearance case. This one doesn't have a suspect. It's just disappeared. What? Makes no sense. So interesting thing about Brandon Swanson there. Now, this next one we're going to talk about is pretty crazy. It's about Gareth Williams, and you don't know Gareth Williams if you live in America. But you do if you live in the United Kingdom, because he was a Welsh mathematician who worked for MI6. And MI6 is effectively the UK's version of the FBI. And he was found dead August 16th, 2020. And police visited his home during the afternoon and they did a welfare check. Now, you guys know what a welfare check is. If you don't, I'll let you know. It's when somebody hasn't heard from another person in a few days or whatever, and they could just call the police and say, hey, can you check on them? Make sure they're all right. Nothing's happened. So the police did a check. Colleagues noted he hadn't been around for several days. No one had talked to him, nothing. So they're like, okay, let's go check him out. And they found his decomposing naked remains in a red North Face bag, padlocked from the outside in the bath of the main bedroom's ensuite bathroom. Police had gained entry to his top floor flat. Let's back up for a second. This is why this one's really crazy. The bag was padlocked from the outside, and it was inside the bathroom of the ensuite, which is basically, you know, your master bathroom has a bathroom in it. That's an ensuite. That's a fancy word for saying, you know, rich people bathroom. But the biggest thing is that it was padlocked from the outside. So how the how would you padlock something from the outside without catching something on you? It's not possible, right? So let's, you know, family of Mr. Williams, of Gareth, I should say, because we had another Williams earlier. Family of Gareth alleged that DNA collection and stuff like that wasn't interfered with, and that fingerprints left at the scene were wiped off as part of a cover-up. No fingerprints, palm prints, footprints, or traces of any DNA were found on the rim of the bath, the bag, or the padlock. A key to the padlock was inside the bag underneath his body. And there was an investigation, obviously. And they say it was about 5 days before he was found. You know, he died on the 16th, room, it was said, and he was found on the 23rd. So the investigation started, right? MI6 met to discuss how the police would handle the investigation in light of him being a member of MI6 and who would lead the investigation. He recently had just qualified for operational deployment and he worked with the NSA and FBI. And, you know, that's good. That's like, you're a secret agent almost. You're moving along. That's some cool shit. The US said that they have no details of Williams' work. It shouldn't need to emerge in an inquest. Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom signed a public interest immunity certificate authorizing the withholding of information of Williams' work and US joint operations. So the US didn't want anything to do with this, and then they signed the paperwork. So this is again looking a little suspicious, the fact that there's paperwork being signed off hiding some stuff because it was quote unquote not necessary for the investigation. But surely all line of work will be open for questioning and, you know, be a potential subject of investigation based on the fact that if you don't find any prints or anything like that, you can't determine what happened or where it happened or who did it. So why would you allow the US to have that immunity signed where everything that they worked with him cannot be exposed? It seems a little suspect, does it not? So the coroner said there were no injuries on his body, there was no signs of a struggle, his body was free of alcohol, free of drugs. They considered his death suspicious and unexplained, and then the FBI said, you know what, we're going to do our own investigation. So in 2010, December, police released further details stating that he had visited a number of bondage websites, and it was sporadic and isolated. That was later found out in the inquest, but they said it was a number of bondage websites and accounted for only a small portion of the time he spent online. He was also noted in the inquest that he never visited any website devoted to claustrophilia, which is a sexual interest of being confined in small spaces. An expert brought in to examine the bag, which Williams' body was found, concluded that he could not have locked it. The police spokesperson said if he was alive, he got into it voluntarily, or if not, he was unconscious and being placed in the bag. The heating in his apartment was found to be turned on, which increased an elevated temperature, which would obviously have sped up the decomposition of the body. And the police released an EFIT photo of two people they were seeking in June, but no one ever came about of it. Now, again, it looks a lot more like a cover-up, especially with the heating being turned up. That's 5-6 days of hot decomposition that's going to happen. Your body's going to decompose a lot faster. The bacteria has that heat. It's going to work. That's why, like, when people are in the morgues and stuff like that, they keep them cold. It slows down bacteria and decomposition. But why would he get into a bag willingly? Was there a gun to his head? Maybe that was okay. Maybe someone had a gun to his head. Maybe somebody threatened him with something and he knew he had to go into the bag. I don't know. Coroner inquest was in 2012. They said that there was a second person present when Williams died, or someone broke in afterwards and stole stuff from his apartment. There was no evidence to support this view. No sign of a forced entry could be found, but they noted that the door and locks had been removed by the time the police experts became involved. So now the locks are missing after the body's been found. Again, looking like something could have been broken or, you know, tampered with. Very suspicious. DNA was found on William's hand. It turned out to be contamination from one of the forensic scientists, and the police determined that a Mediterranean couple they had been seeking had nothing to do with the inquiry. They apologized that they had inflicted pain on that family, and it was caused by incorrect data of numerical code. But again, contamination from a forensic scientist seems a little suspect, does it not? The evidence in the inquest actually showed that it was impossible for Williams to lock himself in the bag, like we discussed, and two experts were unable to lock themselves in a similar bag despite making over 400 appents. So although one stated there was a small chance he would have managed it, it was more likely that he was alive when he got in the bag, due to being the difficulty of arranging a corpse in the position his body was found. Another pathologist stated that Williams would have been overcome by hypercapnia, which is elevated carbon dioxide levels, and after only 2 or 3 minutes, he probably would have died because of the oxygen deprivation and the carbon dioxide increase. His family said they believed that a Secret Service agency was involved in his death, and obviously that was denied and it was rumored to be covered up. The coroner said she would follow the evidence wherever it led, and his former landlady actually said that one night he had woken her up and her husband up screaming for help. Apparently he had managed to tie himself to his bed and required assistance in releasing himself. Testimony was that Williams had claimed at the time he had done it just to see if he could free himself, and that he promised not to try it again, and nothing further had been said about the incident between Williams and the landlady. But again, that seems like something that someone would say if they're being told to cover this up. Oh, he tied himself to his bed. Well, how? How do you tie yourself to a bed? I've always wondered this, okay? So you have these scenes in movies where people are like, okay, they're tied to the bed. And like, if someone else is in the room with them and they tie him to the bed, I understand. But how do you tie yourself to a bed? Because surely after you're... Okay, let's say you get your legs tied and you get one hand tied. How do you tie the other hand? And if you're doing it with that hand, like you managed to tie your hand... Let's say your right hand needs to be tied and you tie your right hand up with your right hand. Surely it would not be tight enough for you to not escape. It would be weak because you don't have that chance to get that grip on it, to get that tightness on it, right? I mean, you can't just tie yourself up and it not be weak, surely. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can do that. Maybe there's people out there who have great abilities to do shit like that, but I just don't see that happening. So, I don't know. I don't know how that would have happened. Williams was actually one of the team of intelligence officers sent to penetrate US and UK hacking networks. And people say that may have had something to do with his death. He took a number of training courses on operational work, and a few months before his death, he was asked to return to HQ as he disliked the rat race, flash car competitions, and post-work and drinking culture. And he was a keen cyclist and walker and wanted to go back to the countryside, and was due to return in September, and he was found in August, obviously. So, they claimed that they stated that the death was unnatural, likely to be criminally meditated. Coroner was satisfied with the balance of probability that he was killed unlawfully, but there was insufficient evidence to give a verdict of an unlawful killing. The coroner concluded that another party placed him in the bag, into the bath, and on the balance of probabilities locked the bag. No fingerprints were found in the bath, though. The coroner was critical of MI6 for failing to report Williams missing for 7 days, which caused extra anguish and suffering for his family and led to the loss of forensic evidence, which is a big thing here. 7 days before doing a checkup, especially if he's a member of your MI6 team or SIS team as well, whatever they may be called now. But he's a key member from what I'm reading. What I'm talking about, he's a key member. So why would you wait 7 days and be like, hey, where's homeboy? Where's Gareth at? So at that time, the temperature's already risen. DNA's gone away, you know, bacteria's eating it, all that shit. It's not good. The coroner rejected it was suicide. No interest in bonding or cross-dressing or autoerotic activity was involved in his death. She said his visit to bondage sites only occurred intermediately and were not frequent enough to indicate an active interest. The coroner condemned leaks about cross-dressing as a possible attempt at media manipulation. So media were saying that, you know, it could be cross-dressing, all this shit. Not the case. It was not the case. They said, The findings of the coroner, Fiona Wilcox, prompted a reinvestigation by Metropolitan Police, which lasted another 12 months, and they had allowed unprecedented access to the MI6 staff, following strong criticism at the inquest of spying agencies' actions towards the death of Gareth. The Metropolitan Police Deputy Assistant Commissioner announced that he, despite a re-examination of all evidence and all investigations, new leads, no definitive answers, nothing had been obtained to help with the cause of his death. The most probable scenario was that he died alone in his flat as a result of accidentally locking himself in the bag. I don't believe that for a hot second. I don't believe that whatsoever. I believe that was a bunch of shit. I believe he was murdered, and we're actually going to talk about a 2015 development that was on Gareth Williams, but it still hasn't been officially announced or told. It was just a theory slash rumor, but a former KGB agent who now lives in England, he defected from Russia, stated during interviews that sources in Russia and the intelligence service, who they have there, the SVR is what they're called, are responsible for Gareth's murder. According to Boris, the SVR tried and failed to blackmail Williams into becoming a double agent. In response to the SVR's attempts, Gareth apparently claimed that he knew the identity of a Russian spy inside the MI6. Boris claimed that Williams' threat meant that the SVR had no alternative but to exterminate him in order to protect their agent inside the MI6. Regarding the cause of death, Boris claimed that SVR killed Williams by an untraceable poison introduced in his ear. Now, interesting again, after 7 days, like we said, you know, you have 7 days of decomposing and the whole entire, you know, bacteria eating away. If they used a poison injected into his ear, then it definitely would not be traceable. It would be a situation where you cannot find it, it's gone forever. And that is personally what I think may have happened. You get injected in the air, it knocks him out, he gets put into a bag, bag is locked, decomposes, 7 days. He's going to die in that bag in a matter of 10 to 15 minutes. There's no oxygen. There's no moving oxygen, which means it's just going to be carbon dioxide, which too much carbon dioxide, as we know, kills humans. We're not trees. So that's the most logical answer, I believe, personally, is that he was murdered by a KGB agent. I know it sounds like some James Bond shit, but he was murdered by a KGB agent who then, you know, managed to hide it very well, turned up the heat and you being smart about it, and then all evidence of poison or marks or anything like that already on a decomposing body isn't going to show up. Now, if I suddenly go missing, you guys know I've been targeted by the KGB, okay? So I'm just throwing that out there. But Gareth Williams' death, that's the most popular theory around it, but yet again, it's just hearsay. Nobody really knows how he basically disappeared from the earth, because there was just no evidence. So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start winding down the podcast here. I was going to do a couple more, but it's getting a little bit late. I've got to start feeding the dogs, I've got to cut the grass, I've got to do the rendering, the upload, and all that good stuff. And I figured you guys are probably sick of listening to my dumbass talk anyway. You can hear the dogs coming right now, probably the clickety-clackety of them nails. I cut their nails, by the way. They just grow very, very fast. So, I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Synopsis. Disappearing people. Only a couple people we discussed, but nonetheless interesting and fun to discuss. So, I hope you guys had fun. If you did, let me know on Twitter and on Instagram at The Synopsis Pod. Another social media shout out. Or you can leave me a voice message on the anchor.fm website. That's right, you go onto the synopsis, you can leave us a voice message. If you do, we'll play it in the next podcast at the start. I would love to hear from you guys and, you know, include you more into the podcast. With that being said, thank you for listening on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you can give us a great review, that would be fantastic. If you can share with your friends, that would be even better. But thank you for listening, and I will hear you all, or I'll be talking to you all, next time, right here, on The Synopsis.